They reached the east slope of the Sierras about a month and a half later than they were supposed to because of the route running into so many difficulties that they had not anticipated because of the treachery of the guide who had written the book and the quarrels within the party itself, which slowed them down. It begins to snow before they can get through the first pass in the Sierras, and they take alder bushes and bend them down and put stones on the tips of them and take blankets out of their wagons and in some cases cut the covers off of the wagons and put them over the tops of the bushes to make little tents out of them, and they let the snow fall on the roofs of those. Now these are all prairie farmers and small town merchants from that Midwestern and Northern border state area where a snowfall in the last week of October would melt in a day or two or three. There is nobody in the group who has any experience of living at 6,000 feet, and they don't know that that snow that's falling will continue to fall and will still be on the ground in March. It does snow for 3 days. When that lets up, there's a sleet storm for 3 days, and that's followed by another snow for another 3 days. On the 10th day, the first person is able to come out, and he finds that the snow then is already about 3 feet deep around the side of the creek and around the lake nearby that is eventually to be called Donner Lake. They go up and measure the depth of snow in the pass that they're supposed to be bringing their wagons through, and the snow is 5 feet deep in the first of the passes. In this episode, Donner and his wife are living in one of these huts with their three daughters. Donner's wife's name is Tamsin. His children are Eliza and Francis and Georgia, and they have Wolfinger's widow living with them also. They have now been living in this situation for about 5 weeks. When the children were asleep, Donner, who speaks the poem in the first person, has a severe gash on his hand that he suffered when he was trying to repair a broken axle, and gangrene is setting in. And he has moments when he becomes delirious, and the pain is moving up his arm. When the children were asleep, Tamsin took my hand and dressed the wound with a clean cloth while I held my breath. The pain was swelling far up my arm. She opened her blouse. "Look at this," she whispered. "You can count my ribs. Feel here and press your fingers in." She unpinned her hair and shook it out so the auburn braids dropped down her spine and seemed to steam against her skin. When she turned, her breasts were as pale and cool as wax. She whispered, "Look how my hips hardly hold a skirt in place anymore." As I joined her in the blanket on the pine floor, she made a remark about the slack skin that flapped on my legs. She liked to see the way they shook, but I told her, "If it's a matter of their shape, surely yours look better." She laughed, lying in my arms with my hand at rest on her small waist.